I wanted to talk with you about Night Omega and what our purpose is here and whatever questions you might have about that purpose or about anything practical related to your coming here. Within the mystery of divine reality, people, individual souls have missions. Some of you may feel called to your own mission, your own calling. And an enterprise like Light Omega also has a mission that's divinely ordained. The difference between a mission that's divinely ordained and that is something that the mind can think of is that the human mind, based on your personal life, can say, oh, I like to do such and such, and I would like to learn about healing, or I'd like to live with a particular culture. It comes from inside, and it's not that it's not a calling, it is. But something that's a calling from the divine is more commanding. It comes upon you as an invitation and an invocation. Your soul responds, it's not your mind that responds, it says, this is what must happen. And so your mind may question this that must happen, but your soul says, I have to do this, or I know that this is who I am, which is essentially the history of Light Omega. What came to me in the 1980s was a transformation of consciousness that came upon me all of a sudden, in which reality changed drastically, the way it did with Buddha in one fell swoop. And after that, there were many, many other kinds of revelations that happened over a long period of time. But the calling to become this started out in small ways. It started out with receiving guidance from that which we refer to as beings of light, the higher realms of light, the hosts of light, however you want to call that. Receiving guidance was the way of receiving instruction, like going to school, finding out what the terrain was of what I was told and heard that I was meant to do. What I was told and heard that I was meant to do corresponded to what I already knew I was meant to do. So there was no gap. It would be the sense of something that you waited for, and you may have had this experience. Something that you've waited for all your life, that when it arrives, you didn't know you were waiting for it, but at the time it arrives, you know that it's what you were waiting for. So it was in the case with my own instruction from the divine. I didn't know beforehand that I was waiting for something, but I was. And so there was a progressive education that took place over decades that led to a picture that was emerging of what I was here to do. And the picture was being constructed in my consciousness from two places. On the one hand, it was the direct guidance in words and concepts of what the mission of Light Omega, which at that time was called the Amherst Center of Healing, that was in before 1990, I believe, what the Amherst Center of Healing was going to be. And then after 1990, it was called Omega Star Child Seminars. So, on the one level, there was instruction coming or revelation coming from the divine. And on the other level, the soul, your soul, one soul responds and says yes. You could say no, but mostly you would hear a calling and something in you rises up to say yes. So it was. So the beginning of this enterprise was my connection with the hosts of light, which gave to me knowledge of the multidimensional universe. Now, I'm saying things matter-of-factly because I say things matter-of-factly about things that are extraordinary. So you can understand that we live in a world that's simultaneously extraordinary and ordinary, both at the same time. And so I can say matter-of-factly that I was receiving guidance from the hosts of light, but I was, and I was prepared to do that. And I was at the same time feeling the calling from within my own being to do what I was being asked to do. And I say this to you this way so you can identify within yourself whether there's anything similar that you might feel about your own calling. So this transpired in the late 1980s. There was a book that came about that I wrote with co-authored with the Archangels. Again, I say this matter-of-factly, but there's nothing matter-of-fact about it. It's the extraordinary and the ordinary combining, the human and the divine. So that was happening in 1989. And then in 1990, there was another step taken, which became this collective adventure, is what we were, that became Omega Star Child Seminars. And at that time, the extraordinary that became ordinary had to do with offering to people a healing process that was the basis on the physical level for purification. Now, some of you may know what purification is, but if you do or you don't, I'll just explain it in my language. Purification is the removal of impediments to the experience of knowing the reality of the divine, which includes removal of the impediments to knowing the reality of your own soul, your own divine being. So on one level, you could say it's the removal of the impediments to the experience of God, or you could say it's removal of the impediments to the experience of your deepest self. Both. Purification is the means by which that happens. And what it is, is a divine and physical process, both, that brings up those areas of the self that are not light-filled, light being the force of creation, as in our language in the West we refer to that. In the East it's referred to differently. But in the West we refer to as light, as in the beginning there was light, that kind of light. So the light that moves through a being can eradicate those impediments to the realization of divine consciousness. There needs to be a willingness to do that, and there, in some instances, needs to be very radical changes in lifestyle in order to do that. But very often, it's not that radical, it's progressive and incremental, that you begin to see, because of invoking the power of light and the intention for light to be part of, divine light, to be part of your inner experience, then the invitation, the divine always works according to invitation. Nothing is forced. You have to agree. It's your free will that agrees. So light is invited or invoked and begins to do its work to show you what it is about your life and what it is about yourself that needs to be changed. And then, of course, there are many other choices you have about whether you are or you're not going to do that. But the light itself creates the aspect of revealing to consciousness that which was hidden. So in 1990, that program, which was at that time called the Golden Phoenix Program, was brought to me and was given to me to practice on the physical level, to practice in terms of purifying my own physical body, so that it could become the vessel of light that God intended it to be. And so I knew that this, in the way that I told you a few minutes ago, that you can be called to something that you know your life has prepared you for and you know you've been waiting for. I knew that about this. I knew that my whole life had prepared me for this purification process and that I was giving to myself to it completely. So, that took place over the next few years, that physical process of purification. And not everybody has to do this now. Those were the conditions at that time, 1990, 91, 92, 93. What's happened that's changed the need in this same way, and that's made Light Omega different too, is that in the course of the last two and a half decades, The earth has been going through a transformation, which you may or may not be conscious of. But the fact that the physical properties of the earth are now holding more light means that everybody has a better chance of experiencing their own divine identity than they did before, without so much of a radical, intentional extrication from life in order to do it. It was in previous centuries and really for millennia that what you had was, you know, temples and initiates and people who devoted themselves to inner work of transformation, and one had to be devoted and you gave your life to it. Now, there's a different story. Now, because of the way in which the divine plan is working on the earth, light has come into the body of the earth itself, so that there's more of a joint effort here, where you can be alive and still operate with the principles of purification and still pray and invite light into your daily life. And much more can happen without the extreme measures of isolation that were necessary before. So in the beginning years of this that was at that time called the latest John Cilliers, there were people who came here for retreats in order for me to share with them the physical process of transforming the body into a light body. And again, I'm saying things in a matter-of-fact way, but it's not a matter-of-fact situation. We have a physical body that's connected with layers of energy, progressive, like, you know, onion skin layers of energy, but they're not separated from each other. They're all interacting. So to bring more light into your body means your whole physical body changes along with your whole consciousness and your whole energy body. So this physical process was simultaneously changing the awareness of the people that were going through these retreats. And meanwhile, the earth was changing. And meanwhile, God was acting in the way that this time is calling for. We're living in a historical epoch where transformation is everywhere, even though it may not look like it's everywhere. So those people who came initially with the idea of a retreat felt that calling to do that, and some people still feel the calling to do that. But it became progressively possible, and I saw that at that time, to witness the transformation of consciousness going on without the full measure of immersion in physical purification that I had gone through, that the light had been sufficiently anchored in the earth so more people could benefit from that physical matrix, that physical support. And so in the early years of Light Omega, in the 1990s, what we were doing, and there was a group here at that time. In fact, some of the old timers are here right now. Some of the old timers are here. There was a group here, and we were collectively, I was teaching and we were learning about purification and the principles of purification. Not so much on the physical level of that too, more on the level of what are the ways in which a human being needs to think, act, and speak in order to elevate consciousness to the level of the soul, that being the operative premise, that we exist in physical form as personalities, interacting with each other on the physical plane, and we get to know each other that way. And for the most part, we get to know ourselves that way. We identify with what we think and what we feel. And so we operate as if that's our identity, but it's not. It's just what we think is our identity. So the point of purification is trying to take your sense of who you are to the level of the soul, which is the level of the divine reality. And so more became possible, even in those years, because of the expansion of light, that there were certain principles that could be articulated. And in the early years, I wrote about that, the early years of the 1990s, going up to the year 2000, the basic principles of purification that have to do with how do you anchor consciousness, your own thought process, so that you take in more light, you remain more aligned with your soul, and you learn to release anything that is not that. That's what a large part of what I was doing and what we were doing at that time. It was changing the frame of reference of what identity is, changing the frame of reference of who you think you are. And of course, it's simple to say this, but those who were here at that time will know how many years it took to move in this direction, because there are all kinds of holdout places for a person who's wanting to transform, even with the best intentions. Even with the best intentions, the holdout places are the unhealed places of the heart, where something isn't willing to let go. You want it to let go, but it's holding on to you. And as I have said many times to the group here, we think things are holding on to us, but when we are really holding on to them. It's a two-way street. That what you want to let go of is not just holding on to you, you're holding on to it. Be that as it may, we have spent years in talking about purification, recognizing the intentionality of transformation, of becoming more aligned with divine purpose, of trying to feel what is God asking of me, all of that being good, and what a person wants to know themselves more deeply and to know what God is, who God is, what God is, what it means to have a sacred life. And the purification process involves the grappling with the holdout places that don't want to move. That grappling with this, and this is an important aspect of Light Omega and of purification, which are inseparable. Light Omega's purpose is to bring a purpose, not the purpose, but a purpose is to bring forward the ancient principles of light, so the world can know how to transform consciousness. It's a planetary purpose. So in the midst of the intention of people to move forward, one struggles with the places that don't want to move forward. And then you move progressively, depending on your own belief and where you've come from in your own background, understanding that the process of purification and of change involves your relationship with the divine. Even if you think you don't have one, it involves your relationship with the divine. And what it involves more than anything else is progressive degrees of surrender, in which one asks, not my will, but thy will. Progressive degrees of surrender involves incrementally and as much as possible letting go willingly of the ego self and of the mind as what decides, makes decisions in life. So, as you could imagine, some places in your own life it might be easy to do this. In some places, there's a struggle to stay in control. And that's how it is for most people. There's ambivalence about surrender. And so then there's ambivalence about becoming light. Because your own holding on to control is the area of consciousness in which you say to God, yes, tell me what you want, but I'll think about it. It's that thing, where you're not willing to let go. We spent some time in those years of the 1990s exploring some aspects of the six scriptures, not too much, but some, going through the Old Testament and the New Testament in places, to see what was in the Old and New Testament that related to purification. Specifically, because it's a premise of spiritual evolution that I hold deeply, that for whatever lacks religion has brought to the world, for whatever crimes it's committed, for whatever insufficiencies it's had, everything doesn't need to be thrown out, everything. And so we try, in the process of growth, to bring forward that which is beneficial and to let go of that which is not beneficial. We tried to do that. And so we looked at the scriptures and the Bible in those years in terms of trying to understand what was about purification and how could we make sense of the religions of the West that were creating dogma, principles, dogma, ideas about how to live and so on. If any of you are interested in such a comparison of the present and the past, the book that's in the bookshop called Embracing the Divine is the best one to address that particular issue of how does the present day desire for transformation relate to the historical, theological, let's say, conceptual teachings of Judaism and Christianity. That particular book will address that question. Some people who came here had that as a question. What are you doing? And what is what you're doing have to do with what I've been taught in church? Some people have had that question, but mostly not. Mostly the people that found their way here were interested in what we would call today individual transformation. So they had either in the background separated to some degree from the beliefs of the church, whatever church, not any particular or any particular religion, but they were more independent in their thinking. And so mostly those were the people who were coming here who needed to deal with their inner process of how to let go when only part of you wants to let go and the other part doesn't. And when most of you are scared because you don't know what it means to let go and you don't know what it's going to ask of your life and you don't know what you're going to have to give up. And all of that becomes part of the process of surrender, which is intimately connected with purification. But the will of the soul, the divine will that exists as the soul's movement is very strong. And so when you reach a certain place in your own inner evolution, your own growth as an individual being, the desire to be true to yourself grows stronger and stronger and stronger. It doesn't grow all the time the same way, same speed for everybody. But the desire to be true to yourself grows stronger. And so what happens is that a person gets tired of the false avenues of behavior or expression or activity that they've been doing. And it increasingly feels like, I can't continue to do this. It doesn't have to be something major like an addiction. It could be an addiction. But there's an inner sense of disquiet, where it feels like the old ways of feeling okay about life don't work anymore. And that's what mainly brings somebody to the inner quest for what's the truth? What do I do? And purification and surrender and attunement and all the words that I use very often, I'm merging them all together, is a way of finding the answer about who are you? Who are you in the deepest sense that's possible? Another premise related to purification and vital neva is that those who stand for the light in the world, those who come here to represent the force of light, which is the force of love, which is the force of unity, which is the force of sacred consciousness, all being part of what the soul brings forward, those who come to bring the light will often encounter darkness, and sometimes great darkness, and sometimes the confrontation is with inner darkness, and sometimes it's with outer darkness. But the battle, the confrontation energetically between light and darkness is very much a part of the experience of committing oneself to the purposes of light. And so part of Light Omega and the teachings of those years were about how to stand in relation to darkness. Darkness being, in this definition, and it's twofold. I'll say it simply. Darkness is anything that separates you from truth. That's one way of putting it. And another way of putting it is darkness is anything that separates you from love. Darkness as opposed to love. So these are energy forces that people have some acquaintanceship with for a variety of reasons that we being all human beings, need to learn how to deal with. So that's part of it too. And I've written quite a bit about it on the website for anybody who's interested. You would go to the section on purification and there's a whole lot of articles on maintaining alignment with light. Some of them you may feel attuned to, some of them you may feel you're not ready for. Just, you know, say a little prayer before you go and just accept whatever comes to you. So I think I'm going chronologically here. Well, I'll say something about the community. This community of brave souls who have been with me and Light Omega for thousands of years, it feels like. People have been called here for unknown reasons, just that something on a level of the soul resonates. And so a person can find themselves here, and that's the end of the road, at least for a period of time, sometimes for a very long time, sometimes for a period of time. And so a community developed in the early, late 1990s, early 2000s, of people who felt called to be here and had a common purpose, which is the kind of purification and transformation that I'm talking about, wanting to feel truth, wanting to feel divine identity. And it was never a very large community, but it was steadfast. Thank you, thank you, thank you. What was it? So that community went and by
engaging in this individually, helping the planet and everything, all the beings on it, also to be for the planets.
Yes. Yep.
By then, I think we started to be conscious of that as motivation.
Well, that's good that you bring that up, because that leads me to talk about portals. Portals are planetary points of concentrated energy that are here in order to assist the planet, in order to update, upgrade, raise its vibration. Portals are energetic points. They're sometimes called nodes, but they're also called points. And they exist around the earth, and some of them you may have heard of. They're in different places, and different traditions have different ideas about what is a portal. But also a location or a body of work such as Light Omega is also a portal whose purpose is planetary and not just individual. The purpose of light and the transformation that individuals experience here is not just for the self, it's for the planet. And it's based on an understanding which has grown progressively over the years that there is no such thing as separation of an individual body. There's simply no such thing. We perceive it to be such, but it doesn't exist. And so whatever an individual does to bring light into their own consciousness and into your own consciousness and your own body, because we're part of one body, one energy body, everything you do to improve your own condition is transferred, transmitted to the planet as a whole. And if a person has taken on an act of service, which involves a very big task of transforming energy, which many of the people here have done and have done and still do, then that transformation of energy within your own consciousness and within your own body radiates out along the unified energy body and helps the other beings and helps the earth. So although I gave you the history of individual transformation, that was always held within the context of the Earth's transformation and of what we were doing for and with the body of the Earth. Based on the premise that there is no separation, that we are all one body and one consciousness. Shall I go on, or you want to ask us?
I got confused on portals.
Portals?
Okay, sorry. I don't know if there's any other way to explain it, but I'm not understanding.
Well, you could think of a flashlight in a dark room. A portal is like that, is that there's a source of light that comes through a particular point, and in the place of darkness, it illuminates the rest of the room. It's like that. That light from other dimensions concentrates itself in that flashlight, in that beam, and goes out and illuminates everything around it. That's what a portal does. It concentrates energy like that. And where there is darkness, it illuminates it with light.
Are portals physical places, or are they human beings, or both?
Both. In skipping to the present time, we have an affinity, and I have close inner relationship with the native peoples of this country, and particularly with the Lakota. You probably have heard me talk about it. So in among the indigenous peoples, I can't say all, but many of the sacred sites are portals for energy. And among indigenous peoples elsewhere in the world, there are also points of energy around which a culture or a tribe has gathered. So sacred sites are locations where portals are, and an individual who has raised their vibration to a great degree also becomes someone who broadcasts and transmits to the earth. So I think mostly a portal is a location, but in a way you could say it's a person as well.
I'm going to ask, what are the conditions that result in a physical place becoming a portal?
Capacity to hold light. And that has to do with purification. The capacity to hold light has to do with all the aspects of your consciousness that, and your physical body as well, that you could imagine would be involved in leading a divine life. If you could imagine just what would have to be let go of in order to give yourself and your life and your body over to the divine purpose it serves, that's the primary ingredient. It's the capacity of all aspects of your being that makes of a human being important.
So there are naturally occurring portals and also portals that are created by human.
Well, I think I'm using this word in a new way because I haven't said this before. I haven't thought to myself that a human being can be a portal, but there's no reason that that's not true.
But in terms of a place.
Place? I believe so. I don't think that there's such a thing as a human created portal. A portal is always a divinely ordained point that's given to the earth in order to concentrate energy. The energetic grid for the earth is very specific. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about earth in terms of can the earth heal herself and what do we need to do to help the earth, it's because the planetary grid, which has on it all of the sacred sites that are portals, supports the energetic vitality of the earth. So the portal is always given by divine intention to a particular location. A human intention can construct.
So those points always were portals.
What?
Those points that are portals were always portals because of their because of the cosmic conditions, the positions on the gravity.
The matching on the earth.
I think that's probably true. But since in my consciousness, we're talking about this round of civilization, I don't know what happened before this round, but in this round of civilization, starting from 10,000 years ago, I would say that that's true, that the portals were also always portals, because the earth is a being, and so the earth has a physical body that's evolving, and it, just like human bodies, it has an energy body, and the energy body has to be supported by this, by the points of light that are continually getting infused by more light to hold the energy body. So I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. There are people who travel in groups to go to various sacred sites to make sure that these sites are upholding the light that's coming through.
Isn't the Matrona Deer also?
It is. And the Matrona Deer is also given by divine guidance. We're talking about India here, Matrona Deer in Oregon.
Did you write anything about portals that we could?
Probably not.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Until tomorrow.
That'll come tomorrow.
portals, what would you like to know? I'm not as knowledgeable about this science of portals as somebody who has actually studied the Earth grid. That's not my domain. So I won't be able to give you the kind of information if you want to know. If you look it up on the internet, you'll find somebody who's, you know, really knowledgeable if you want the information.
I don't think I want to just dominate, because I could ask all kinds of questions. I would
look at it. All right. But what I have written about is how the transformation of the physical Earth is taking place, the light body of the Earth. And for that kind of thing, to know about the Earth's transformation, you just go onto the Light Omega website and do a search on transformation of the Earth. But it's not specifically about portals.
What about ancient principles of light? You often refer to that.
Ancient principles of light are based on the premise that everything is energy and that we have some choice as free beings to choose our existence, which also means to choose what we become. And so ancient principles of light were initially articulated in the temples of old for the initiates to learn how to transform their bodies into a light body through all the means that I'm telling you about, through the physical means of purification, through the consciousness means of purification, through the knowledge of the way of releasing areas of darkness on the emotional and mental level. The ancient principles of light are the teachings of purification. And there are some principles that are more important than others to know. A, what I just said, everything is energy. There's nothing that's not energy. Therefore, everything is permeable to the energy of light. There's nothing that in principle is not permeable. The only thing that prevents energy of light from moving more freely is something that opposes it or that blocks it. But substance, matter, this, isn't impermeable because it's physical, because everything is energy and light works on that level. B, there's nothing stronger in the universe than the force of light. It's the force of creation. And so when anybody encounters darkness of any level, of any kind, it's important to uphold that light is stronger than darkness. That's always important to know. And C, D, E, and F are the ways of holding consciousness, your own emotional and mental thought process, so that when you take in light, and when you invoke light, and when you encounter darkness in yourself, and when you're dealing with places that don't want to let go, you know what to do. This is, C, D, E, and F are the ways in which that ambivalence about what to hold on to, what to let go of, comes about. So the rest of the principles of light are the purification process. That's what that is. Light and darkness, maybe this is B1 or 1B. Light and darkness are forces of creation. They are part of God. Nothing exists that's not part of God. So everything that is of what we call darkness is also contained within the oneness. There's nothing outside of the oneness. So the forces that we're calling opposed to light, opposed to love, also are part of creation and are present for a variety of reasons, one of the main ones being in order that those souls who are desiring to become fully conscious within form can experience freedom of choice, how to choose the light. And there are many souls that are working on that, how to choose the light question. If there were no oppositional energy, it wouldn't be possible anyway, because the universe is created to manifest everything, not to just manifest some things that one feels good about. So the force of darkness is manifested in part, in large part, but not entirely, in order to allow that freedom of choice to happen.
Okay.
Is this place a portal?
Yes, it is. Consciously and intentionally and by divine mandate, this, by Omega, is meant to be a transmitter of the higher vibrations of light to the planet. Yes.
So when you move, will that portal go with you?
Yes. Yes. Whoever moves into this house will have a very nice experience, we hope. But the portal will travel with us. Right? The Village of Light is its own divine, what I call a divine bestowal. It's its own purpose, emerging out of the purposes of Light Omega and joining with several other entities such as the Yoga Center in Amherst and Oroville and its purpose and the Sound Temple in Tiruvannamalai. Our connections with these particular points of light are to form a unified network, its own grid, among these places of Light Omega, Yoga Center, Oroville, Sound Temple, Arunachala. I know these words may not mean anything to you, but these are places in India that we're connected to.
Can I ask, what is the temple in Tiruvannamalai referring to?
The Sound Temple is also a portal. It's being built right now. It's being built right now. And its purpose is to be an international peace center and source of healing that will hopefully draw to itself people from all over the world who will come there to celebrate through various forms of art and music and creative process the consciousness of sacred life. So it's in the process of being created right now. And I was involved with its creation. What shall I say about that? I went with some people twice to India in 2017 and 2018. And one of the tasks I was given at that time was to plant in the earth the energetic cornerstones for the Sound Temple, literally to plant it through the energy that came through me into the earth. So that was the foundational structure of the Sound Temple. But in a physical sense, I think what we would say that it has a big meditation hall right now. What does it have? A thatched roof? Yeah, big round meditation hall, thatched roof. And it's just acquiring water and electricity. So it's not a big building yet, but it has big aspirations. And in my own inner knowledge, I know that this is what's meant to be. More questions, or should I go? What I like about this kind of conversation with you all, and I can't encourage you, is that I'm talking about such big things and with such big concepts, and I'm going over a very, very big landscape. So you pull out of what I'm saying, whatever it is that, you know, creates life in response to you. I'm very happy about that. Okay. All right, then. So purification was the basis, and learning how to deal with light and darkness was the basis of the initial years of Light Omega. And there was a lot of sacrifice involved. The willingness of the souls here to sacrifice personal comfort to take on consciously energies of darkness was very great. In other words, the people who came here during the 1990s were committed to this work of consciously, as much as possible, consciously taking on energies of darkness in order to transform them. This wasn't anything that anybody did. It didn't go looking for the energy in order to transform it. What had happened was that those souls who were here that were part of a unified mission already had that energy that they were meant to deal with in their energy body. And so a great deal of our time that we spent in those years was about the energies that people had taken on in order to transform them. Do you know the word transmute? You know, turning darkness into light? Is that a word you all know? So that's what was going on. And because we're all one body, what I knew and know now, and was true then and it's true now, is that what a person can do because of their desire to serve the earth is a great deal. One person can do a great deal. We think much smaller than we actually are. We're each capable of so much more than is known because we identify with the physical body and not with the energy body, which we mostly don't know about. And so these brave souls who took on these energies of difficult darkness were perpetually and are transforming the energies in their energy body in order that that current of energy, which is connected with the earth, would be helped along to be transformed. And you would understand this if you understand I'm saying we have one body. Our bodies physically and the earth's body are not separate. So what I'm saying to you is that for anybody who has on a soul level elected to do this work of transmuting energies, its effect is planetary. And so we have spent a lot of time talking about this and how to deal with the sacrifice that's been necessary for many people that was chosen to do what that was chosen to do. Well, in the 2000s and coming up to the present time, a lot of it was what I've been telling you. A lot of it was the transmutation of darkness. A lot of what went on. A lot of the struggle to remain aligned with light and the purposes of light and the purposes of transforming the earth into a planet of love and unity in the presence of that which would oppose it. You know, we deal with this today in our country, forces that we see that are opposed to love and unity, or that want to create separation, or that do create separation. So we often see that around us now, but we are looking mostly, when we look outside ourselves, at people. We're looking at the administration, or the government, or the president, or whatever, and we think about what people are doing. Here, and on spiritual life in general, we're not dealing with people, we're dealing with energies. People are composed of energies, and there are many such energies that influence the way people act. So we have, in more recent years, understood our role here at Light Omega to be spiritual activists. That was my phrase that I found a few years back. But there's social activism and there's spiritual activism. Spiritual activism is where you understand that you are working diligently to change consciousness on a planetary level through the transformation of energy and through the transformation of your own consciousness. And that's a deliberate thing that we are doing here, transforming energy in order to transform collective consciousness. Spiritual activism is the inner work you do to be of benefit to the whole, be of benefit to the whole creation, the whole planet, the whole of humanity. And we do hold that as a lodestar, as a goal, and as a consciousness. Well, more recently, and I think I will bring things to a close with this, more recently, because of events that happened a year and a half ago, another part of what I was here to do awoke, and I can actually say awoke because I had no idea that I was going to awake. But sometimes revelation comes in layers, and you know one thing one time in terms of mission, and the next part of the mission doesn't reveal itself until it's time to reveal itself. We understand divine timing. So in a year and a half ago, I was assisting a group of people that were the planning committee for a conference that was to host in Amherst and to bring together people who were devotees and students and people who had practiced the teachings of Sri Aurobindo and the Mother. So I was helping that group, but not affiliated with it at that time. I was helping as a mediator or
consultant.
I started out as a consultant. little did I know what would that emerge into. Things opened up in my consciousness because I was doing that. I started becoming aware of my inner relationship with India, with Sri Aurobindo and the Mother, and with my own purpose. This was all evolving over the last year and a half of bringing together the energies of the East and the West, of India and the Western consciousness as embodied in this country. That all happened in a very quick way, starting from a year and a half ago, almost 2 years now, that the heart opened to such profound love that was completely unexpected. And it's the way people change. The heart opens, and suddenly you're where you didn't know you were going to be the minute before. And so it happened that way. And so within a short space of time, I took part in that conference that I was a consultant for. And then I went to India. August, September? 2 months later, I went to India and invited Will along and said, I had just met Will and said, would you like to come to India with me? And so we went to India in October of that year. Yeah, there's so much of that that has changed in the last year and a half. Because Light Omega's mission has expanded now to move beyond the level of transformation and transmutation to incorporating within it, embodying the energies of love and unity, which are the energies of the Divine Mother. Now, if you think about this, I have tried different ways to explain this, but let me try it this way. If what you want is a world that's of peace, and if you want a world where people can relate to each other as family, in love, in real love, not just the word love, if you want that for a world, then you have to be able to bring it about. You can't superimpose it from someplace else. It's got to come from within. Any change has to come from within. So let's say that that's a goal that we hold, that we want a world like that. Well, that world that we're talking about is the energy of the mother, the divine as mother. The mother is the soul that lives within all. The mother is the divine that lives within all. So the energy of the divine mother, which is the unity or the aspiration for unity, needs to be combined with the principle of light and transmutation so that what needs to be let go of through the transformation of darkness can be let go of, so that what remains will be the natural tendency towards love and unity. Without either part, it wouldn't happen. That which is in the way has to be let go of, and the embodiment of the energy of love and unity has to come forward into one's embodiment. So this has been the transformation of Light Omega in the last few years. If you look around, you'll see the pictures of India behind me. There's some more. Because our work has been to bring this energy here and to combine it with the energies of transformation to bring the world through our own capacity to transmute and transform into the energy of love and unity. And again, I'm telling you, it's possible to do this, but you have to think, really, each of you make more of a difference than you're aware of. Your consciousness matters more than you're aware of. You being every human being, we just think very small. We just think very small because we're used to it. So energetically, if one embarks on a process of deliberate transformation, the potential for affecting human consciousness is very great, much greater than anybody thinks, because we're all connected. So we're all connected means if you change, everybody around you is affected by that change. So we have a few more minutes. I'm still open to questions if you would like to ask something.
And if anyone online has a question, just hit the raise hand button and I'll unmute you.
Do you suggest a particular practice for this transformation to occur? Or is it individual or different for every person?
I suggest that you pray about that and that you ask. And there are some things that are generally of help. If you don't come up with a specific answer, I will point you in a direction that I find helpful. But really, everything has to do with inner resonance and what you feel is real for you. You know, somebody's spiritual practice is walking in the woods. That's enough. But whether it's enough for somebody else, that's a question. Or somebody's spiritual practice there's 20 minutes of meditation a day, but it varies greatly. And one of the reasons it's varying even more is because the light in the earth and in our physical bodies is now bringing forward the inner directives of the soul. So if you pray about it, hopefully you'll find something that points you in the direction, and I certainly will help you, you know, define what that might be. I feel great trust and confidence and hope, and I would like to convey it to you that your own soul is alive and awake and ready to say hello to you and ready to communicate. And it's a matter of believing that, trusting that, asking for that, and trying to free yourself of whatever you feel is in the way of that, all at the same time. It's the great adventure of our time. The great adventure.
Sri Aurobindo called it the adventure of consciousness and joy.
One way to think about joy, which I like, is that the biggest or the most powerful source of joy is that which comes from being oneself. It's very simple. It doesn't involve doing anything. It just involves truth. The freedom of truth is the greatest source of joy. Freedom of truth, to be yourself. So, since we're all here to be ourselves, everybody gets to do that. It's just a question of when. The freedom to be yourself is the source of joy. Well, I like to end things with the closing prayer, so I'm going to do that. We pray for ourselves and for all beings, that all may feel within themselves the truth of their divine nature. We pray that that touch of the soul may come to all, and that we may know as a collective human family that we are one. May love and unity, peace and joy that are part of our own souls arise, teaching us how to let go of all else. We pray especially for those in positions of responsibility and authority, that the governments of nations may also conform to the principle of truth, love, peace, and joy, and that all souls everywhere may abide in respect and in kindness and love for all of creation. For all of creation is one, and we pray that all of us may realize this. Amen. I also often close with the Sanskrit words Om Namo Bhagavate. So I'll say that Om Namo Bhagavate means I bow to the Supreme Being that lives within all. I bow to the Supreme Being that lives within all. Om Namo Bhagavate.
Om Namo Bhagavate.
Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.